Welcome to the Events Innovator Show, where we explore the ideas and strategies that are transforming events. Get ready to unlock the secrets to creating extraordinary experiences. And now, here's your host, Phil Michon.
Welcome, everybody. Have you ever played the wrong note, set up the wrong room, or read the wrong script? When I was doing an internship soon after college, I was asked by a pastor to read a passage of scripture in the service. So I practiced it because I didn't want to screw up. I practiced it five times, in fact. So I got up there, I read it, and then everyone in the congregation is looking at each other. The pastor steps up and says, "Phil, phenomenal job reading that passage. It was the wrong passage, but good job." My heart sank, but yet he encouraged me. He kept me going. And that reminds me of a story that we're going to talk about in today's episode with Herbie Hancock and Miles Davis. You won't want to miss it. Here's this week's episode with Bethany Gustafson. Welcome back, everybody. I'm excited for another episode of the Event Innovator Show. I am happy to introduce you to a new friend, Bethany Gustafson. She is an event strategist, but she's also event get it done girl. She has been working in the event industry for about 15 years. She's primarily focused in the corporate world, B2B, B2C, and I am excited to have a great conversation today because we're going to talk about one of my favorite things, music, but we're also going to talk about storytelling as it shows up in events. But Bethany, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. This is such an exciting thing to do. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's step back in time a little bit. How did you get into events?
I think like a lot of people fell into events. I graduated college, did the one thing I swore I wouldn't do, which was move back home. But I did. And I, believe it or not, this is going to age me, but I saw an ad in our local newspaper, excuse me, in the classifieds, for a company that was looking for a part-time office admin and part-time trade show position. I didn't know what a trade show was, but I knew I can figure things out. You know, I like to get shit done and figure things out. And so I went in and talked my way into getting a job. And I was with that company from really just from the very beginning. It was split 50-50 between office admin and events. And then by the time I left, I was running, managing, owning the full scope of events from 18-month out RFP selection process to building the agendas and getting the CEU credits for our attendees all the way to post-event wrap up. And I was doing 8 of those a year. So it was great. I ate, slept, drank, lived, breathed events. And it was so great because I kind of dove in head first and learned how to swim. That's how I kicked off. And then it's just sort of evolved from there.
And I was asking you pre-show what people comment on now, 14, 15 years later, about what makes you unique. And a couple things stood out in what you described. One is you said that you're a strategist. So you like to start with the end in mind and reverse engineer back through the details. And then you're like all great event producers. You do get stuff done. You know what needs to be done. You do it with excellence. But that combination is more unique, that you can see things from the end. Describe that a little bit more. How did you discover that was kind of your sweet spot?
So that's a great question. I believe firmly that we as a culture, as a group of people, we like to believe that we are pragmatic and that we are business driven and we just sort of stumble into emotions. But we know that that's not true, right? Studies show that that's just not true. We are primarily emotional creatures who try to bring in details to corral all of that, right? And of course, there are budgets, there are time constraints, there are projections and KPIs and attendees and everything that you would want to be able to build repeatable, scalable events. And that is data-driven. But ultimately, people want to work with people they like. And so I learned pretty early on that all I can do is be myself and try really, really hard. And if I can hold on to my humanity that way, I can also see that humanity in other people. So I very quickly, because I was absorbing all of this for the first time, I think it put me in a really strategic position to be able to say, all right, if I'm somebody who is going into this blind, my questions are probably questions other people have as well. How can I anticipate those questions and answer those questions ahead of time so that they don't even have to ask? How can I see what's coming down the road and not only get just the fundamental stuff out of the way, but then how can I also enhance it? How can I make it one of a kind? And I think people, I think really businesses and people thrive when they're seen for who they are and outside of just their attendee persona, when you really can find ways to speak to people directly, whether that's through offering like white space in agenda planning, whether that's strategically building networking events and team building type stuff. Sometimes it can be kind of cringe, but if they're done really well, it can be really powerful. And so I think that that's crucial. And I think that's something a lot of companies miss.
So there's the normal end goals that businesses have. Right. They want to have a good ROI. They want to maybe have good retention. They want to have a good NPS score, speaker scores, sponsor retention. Like those are business goals that we're focused on as event planners. We need to have those in mind. But I'm hearing you talk about an emotional, like what are people feeling at the end? What do they know at the end? Reverse engineer that for me. Like let's take an emotion that you want people to feel that's obviously going to drive those business goals probably. If they're positive emotions, hopefully you're not going for a negative emotion. But reverse engineer something for me, like walk it backwards from something that you've done at an event recently.
Sure. So I recently, just a couple weeks ago, we were doing a conference, a trade show with a YMCA organization that focuses on philanthropy. And this is an organization I've partnered with for the last 8 years. And it's an annual event. And it's, while it's not our typical corporate driver, it is an important organization to be a part of because it helps position us as thought leaders. It positions us as a trusted advisor in the YMCA community. And it's about doing good too, right? Like doing good things that spur other good things to come from that. When I was thinking, what can we do that's different, right? Sometimes trade shows are just booth after booth after booth, right? It's kind of like a used car lot. You know, you're going on there, you know, people are going to try to sell you things. And so you kind of come in like with your wall up, you're sort of like, I'm here just to network, or I want to get some swag, but I'm not really expecting a deep engagement. So how can I change that? Right. And so through a lot of brainstorming and planning and think tanks, because I am a big believer in collaboration. I don't know all of the great ideas out there. And I do believe that we are stronger and better together. And I know that sounds cliche, but it is true. I think so. So after a few weeks of that, it occurred to me, oh, we should do our own philanthropy portion of this. We should partner with a local organization and give back, just because like we're here. We all know companies spend a lot of money going to trade shows and exhibiting. What is a small way that I can reach these specific attendees who are focused on philanthropy? So what we did is we had an opportunity for people. It's so simple, just to scan a QR code and fill out a little form. And for every scan that we got and every form that's filled out, our organization would donate $5 to the St. Louis Food Bank. The event was in St. Louis. And nobody else was doing that. Yeah. Nobody else. While there were certainly other exhibitors that focused on philanthropy, it wasn't in St. Louis. It wasn't with the people who were there at that event. It allowed us just to break out of just our usual structured 8x10. Oh, we sell software. Let me talk to you about that. It was like, no, people are people. And how can I if I'm attending this event, what's important to me? And then going from there and saying, well, giving back to people, that's important. That's why I'm here. I want to learn about that. I want to see what other organizations are doing to help give back to their communities. So it's not asking that much. It's simply considering yourself as an attendee and what's important to you, and then how can we make that happen?
So if I'm understanding right, mm-hmm. you were not in charge of the entire event. You were in yeah. charge of the booth for the YMCA at this
That's
event.
Right. That's
and through
right.
that booth, when they scanned a code, you were giving $5. Did they have the opportunity to add to that?
Yes, they did. Yes, we encouraged them to. So for our company, we were the whole event was organized by YMCA. Our company was exhibiting there. Yes, to your point, we did. We encouraged people to make any, whatever their dollar amount was, you know, because some people might want to give $1. Some people might want to give $500. That's fine. We'll meet and match that. But just for even if people didn't want to donate to that part, if they would just allowed us to scan their badge and, you know, grab some info so we could follow up with them, then on their behalf, we donated $5. And you know, that really adds up to a lot of money at the end of a 3-day event. And again, we're not doing that to get something out of it for ourselves. I mean, of course, there's always going to be the reciprocal benefits of doing something good. I personally believe that that does come back to you as a whole. And of course, it helps our ability to connect with people who are the attendees there and just differentiate ourselves from the exhibitors. But really it was more of how can we as humans break out of this? How can we just not have this stuffy corporate experience? And if we are going to do that, let's at least have some fun with it. Let's at least drive some sort of feeling after that, that feeling that says they see me, they yeah. get me. These are my people. Because ultimately, like I said before, people want to do business with people they like. And if I can be that person, if I can help represent an organization that can be those people, that's easy for me. That's where I get reinvigorated. That's where life comes from, right? For me. And I think that that's something that a lot of companies ignore.
I'm going to grab something, but I want you to talk about how your storytelling love factors into maybe just that story or in general, yeah. the way you approach planning. I'll be right back, but talk about that story.
Okay. So, So I am, believe it or not, I know I don't sound like I have an accent, but it tends to come out, at times, and particularly if I'm, annoyed or if I've had a few bevies, right? And so being a Southerner, I think it's in my blood. I think it is just part of who we are. We love telling stories. We love, that's part of our culture is passing down these stories. And when I went to college, I sort of fell into this degree program of rhetoric. And it was fascinating. I loved it. It was so unique. And it's funny because the foundation of rhetoric stems from Aristotle, who said, rhetoric is by definition, the art of finding in any given case, the available means of persuasion. And for me, the most available means of persuasion, I firmly believe is storytelling. It's painting a picture. It's building something greater and allowing also like any type of art, allowing a viewer to take what they need from it, right? Because I might look at a piece of artwork and I see something that's completely different than what you see. But if we can both respect that it is art, I think that's a commonality that I think our world really needs, to be honest. So I've always been a natural storyteller, probably to the annoyance of many of my teachers throughout school. I know certainly my parents and probably some ex-boyfriends were like, gosh, let me get a word in, lady. But it's who I am and I don't know any differently. And instead of fighting against that, I think I just work with it.
You know, it's interesting when we had our pre-conference session, you and I told stories the whole time.
Right.
We weren't talking about the interview. We were getting to know each other through the stories that we told. And so I can tell that's part of who you are. When you think about planning an event and making it a story, What are some of the things you're thinking about?
Sure. So so what I do when I start off an event, I consider first and foremost the attendees that are going to be there. Because if I don't get that part, nothing else matters. It does nothing. It is just an exercise in futility if I don't know who I'm trying to reach. Whether that's at a SKO, right, a sales kickoff, if that's an event that we're exhibiting at, whether that's an event that I'm organizing on behalf of another company, I got to know who's going to be there. Once I can figure out who's going to be there, then I work strategically and think, okay, what can I know about this group of people? What do they want? So I identify who, then what. Because I already know the when, I already know the where. The next is the how. And then I can start saying, okay, what have I done in the past? What are competitors doing, particularly in the B2B landscape? What are things that I'm hearing and doing diligent research on to find out where the pain points are? What is it that how can I meet what these attendees are here for, right? Because nobody's going to go to an event just because they have nothing else to do. You go to an event either because you are driven for professional goals, whether that's networking or you want to, you know, mix and mingle with fellow coworkers, whether that's you want to learn a new skill or get some CEUs, or you are emotionally driven. You have some sort of emotional connection because there we are again, going back to the emotions of who we are as a people. So then I figure out, okay, now that I've got that figured out, let me spend some time and really sort of put myself in their shoes. And if I don't know, because I'm not going to know everything, I ask. I have no ego when it comes to asking. I see so many event people who are just like, nope, this is what we've done. We've always done it. It is what it is. And I think that's such a crucial error. You can't do that. The minute you do that, not only are you at a disadvantage for yourself, but you're really creating a disadvantage for the attendees. We're all evolving and growing and changing. And I mean, let's consider even just how our specific event industry has changed since COVID. And in some ways that feels like a lifetime ago. And in some ways it feels like yesterday, right? So I think that it is crucial that we get to that point. And the way you get there is you ask questions. Again, like from the very beginning, like I said, I didn't know anything about events. I never knew what a trade show was. I bluffed my way through that intro interview. They asked, did you have trade show experience? And I said, well, you know, I've done a lot of events, which is true if you consider, you know, parties in college, if you consider, you know, I've been to a lot of music festivals, and there's got to be something in there that I can use. I did a good enough job to convince them to give me the job. And then I just grew and grew and grew. But if I had gone in saying, yeah, I can do events, and I just stopped there, not only would I, maybe I would have gotten the job, maybe not. It didn't pay very much. So maybe, maybe I was just one person that was like, yeah, sure, I'll do it for this amount. But I was really, I don't know how to not be curious. It's in my nature. And I think, again, that probably ties back to the storytelling element that you were talking about. I am eternally curious. And I think that's a real benefit.
I think we have to be curious. You know, I've thought a lot about the arc of a great Hollywood movie and the way they tell stories. And if you look at your attendees as the hero of that story, and you think about what are the peaks and the valleys in their experience going to be, and how do you bring the right gurus in to help them out of the final valley so that they can leave on that peak of they can now conquer whatever problem it is that they came in with, that the conference was there to solve. They're going to feel great. That then some of the business goals are going to happen. Like right. They're going to tell their friends about it. They're going to probably want to come back. Your ROI is going to probably go up because they buy more stuff at the end. You know, your sponsors want to come back. All those things happen if you've told a good story. But you're right. It starts with, do you know who that customer is? And do you know what they want? And I'm wondering if you've used AI to help you in understanding the customer.
That's a great point. So very rarely. Okay. I think I'm, I, I appreciate the advancement of technology. I, of course, use all kinds of technology in my life constantly. And I've relied on AI to help guide some of my decisions or help refine some concepts, or if I'm working on the content specifically, the verbiage, how I want to position it. But I've never gone in and just been like, hey, tell me about, I'm going to be at this conference. Tell me who the attendees are, because I don't want to rely too much on it. Once I've done my research, then I can bring AI in to help, help refine and polish up. But I think, again, primarily it goes back to getting to know people, and that doesn't come easy. You have to invest in time. Companies have to invest the money to do it. And to your point earlier, yes, of course there should be a direct tie to the ROI. But I think you can also make an argument that having engagement is its own measuring tactic, right? So even if I don't close any deals from this event immediately, I still, if I have people coming back to our LinkedIn page, if I have people who are chitting and chatting about, you know, did you see what they're doing at this booth? Oh, do you remember last year that you did this? Oh, hey, did you see so-and-so was doing that? That alone, man, that is something. It's not directly tied to ROI in the sense that there's a sales cycle and now we've closed deals, now we move on. But it builds that brand perception and it builds that engagement. And I think that's where the long-term success comes from. I don't think it is necessarily, okay, we've closed, you know, I don't know, 30% more this year from going to this one specific show. It's year after year after year being seen as a community leader, being seen as a trusted advisor, being seen as a titan in the industry that people can go back to. I think sometimes people get very focused on, well, to be the titan, I have to be this like major, big, like super corporate way of operating. And that's just not the case. When I think of the people and the vendors and the experiences that I've worked with that really matter, it's again, the people that I've liked. It's the people who, yeah, maybe they're trying to sell something to me, maybe not, but I didn't walk away feeling like I was being sold.
Yeah, interesting. Am I hearing correctly that you primarily go to trade shows and support a company in creating their booth, or do you sometimes produce the whole show?
So currently, yes, the first part, where I drive our sponsorships, our exhibits, speakerships, panel interviews. Prior to my current position, I was the one organizing the events. So. Mm-hmm. And I think that positioning has changes what I offer as well. Sure. But I've done it from both sides of it. So I understand what the attendees are looking for. And I also understand exhibitors, what we want. And then also this middle part, which is the group that's organizing it, all that goes into that, that typical exhibitors don't know and that attendees don't understand either. And I think, I really do believe that events are an art. And I think what happens is a lot of companies want to make it science. And that's just not how it works. You could try. It's just not going to go well for you. I think that when you can embrace that there's, number one, we all know there's going to be stuff that goes haywire with events. It just is what it is, right? That's the nature of it. So when you allow some room of flexibility there, and when you allow some opportunity to again, even for you to learn something new. I am always learning constantly. And I love that. I love when I go into a meeting room with people who are my peers and who are more advanced than I am that I can learn from. I think that's crucial. I think the minute that you go in and say, I already know it all, you've lost. You've lost because there's no way that you can know it all. So I think that when you consider that events really are an art and you have that storytelling, you have that overall narrative that you want people to leave with, but you leave room for how to get there, that's where the magic happens.
Absolutely. All right, I left the room for just a second because I want to show you something and tell you a quick story, and then we're going to move into the music part of our conversation. So this is an octopus, and I forget its name. I think it's Ollie, but it's the brand for Kraken, which is a large electric company, I believe. They're in the oil and gas and electricity industry. And I went to a conference last year, I think it was in November, and they were displaying. Their booth stood out from everybody else because it had that purple in it. It was just, it was electric in the sense of it drew your attention to it.
Yep.
But the thing that I will never forget is I wanted one of those. I was like, that is cool. I've never seen swag that looks that like that. You know, most swag is just something you take and you'll probably forget about it. Yep. Or, you know, it might be something useful. But this has a story because they said, oh yeah, you can have one. But you need to make a donation to this Boys and Girls Club or whatever it was. We don't care how much.
Yeah.
We just want you to make a donation and then we're happy to give it to you. It could be $5, $10, doesn't matter because we just want you to give back. We don't want to just give these away. That instantly had my attention and I won't forget that. You know,
Precisely.
I don't have room to display it or I would, but it's like one of those stories. So I think what you were describing is, do something that is memorable that connects to the mission of the show that you're in, or just is going to make you stand out, which is what they did. Because every other booth was the traditional line by line, 10 by 10. Theirs was bigger. It looked like this creative structure. It looked like you were in the sea. And then they had these octopi that you could actually get for a donation. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is. And that's very similar to what I was saying that we did with this YMCA conference, you know, and when I came to the company that I'm currently with, which is a technology registration software payment processing company, it was the booths that I inherited were very, they were large, they had a presence, but it was very demo driven. Mm-hmm. And I watched attendees walk up to the booth and sort of back away slowly, right? Because there was this army of people in the very front. And granted, I appreciate the fact that salespeople were eager to talk, but that in and of itself can be really overwhelming to someone. Because not everybody has the same personality type. And I think, again, that is a pretty basic element that people tend to forget, or companies tend to forget also. And so I came in and thought, how can I change this? What we're doing, I get it. They see our brand. They see us as, you know, new and innovative, and that we're investing in our company. We're investing in their communities. And yet it's still not quite right. We're still not getting that connection piece, right? So over the years, I have refined our process. Last year at our largest event of the year, it's a park and rec conference. We had one demo station. When I started, that booth had 9 or 10. It was the same 10 by 10, or I'm sorry, 10 by, no, 20 by 20 space. But this year I've slowly been getting the executive team to like step away, trust me, let me guide you on this. And we had one demo station, which by the way, got used, but it got used purposefully, right? It wasn't just, oh, sure, here's somebody that's walking by to grab swag and now we have to do a demo. No, it was people who really wanted to see the software. What we did instead was we revamped our booth to have this giant like rock wall entrance. We had a path through our booth that looked like the outdoors. And at each step along the path, we had different features of what we do, what some of our software pieces do. We had a faux fireplace in the middle. And people, I can't tell you how many times I heard dad jokes about, oh, we got a permit for it. It's like, okay, yeah, we get it. But people still loved it, right? It was attention grabbing. And that in and of itself allows for those conversations to happen. We had a Slack line for people to practice their balance. We had a nice picnic table to just sit and chat. Or you know what? You can sit and you can check your emails. You know, we're here. We are here. We're going to be here regardless. So if you want to be here in our booth for a couple minutes and maybe then I'll bring you over a bottle of water and we can chat a little bit about what we do and what you're looking for, then great. But also, if you just see us as an opportunity to rest and to catch your breath and to see what's going on, I guarantee you, you'll come back by. You'll see us as a safe space. And when you think back to what you learned from the conference, what organizations you met, you're going to remember us. It just happens. And the data proves that. We also did a couple of years ago, postcards from whatever city we're in. I have them made, created, our team makes them custom. And I have them on the table, have a little sign that says, fill out a postcard. People love this. They drop it in like this clear ballot box that I have. And I go through personally and stamp them and get them out. And that is such a brilliant way of doing it because, number one, we get nothing from that. I'm not scanning your badge every time you're doing it. I mean, I could try and I hope my salespeople do try. But again, we're giving back. And also that then lands at their home, what, 2-3, depending on the postal service, 2-3 weeks later. They also will send it to their offices and show their coworkers who weren't able to go for whatever reason. Hey, we sent you this. We were here. We thought of you. So again, it's that fostering the communications and building that relationship where it is an art and not a science.
I love that. You know, when the event that I produce, we know that most of the people coming are between 30 and 60 and they're women. Therefore, they're probably moms.
Right.
And so we always are thinking about what can we do that helps them stay connected to their families, even though they want to be totally immersed. And something like that is a great way to send something back to the kids that, hey, I was thinking about you.
That's right.
How much better even if you can make it a picture that they took there at your booth on the opposite side, right. And then they could write it. I mean, that'd be like next level.
That would be next level. Yeah. I think we're making magic here. And I will say, you know, as I'm going through and stamping them, part of the reason why I choose to do that part, I could absolutely ask someone else to handle that, or I could, you know, drop ship and somebody would take care of it. But I like it because it also, again, it fuels me. I see it. And I do see those of like, hey kid, hope you did great at your karate championship. Can't wait to see you when I get home. Or, hey, mom and dad, I'm at my first work conference. Aren't you proud? Or, hey, so-and-so that, you know, we used to work together. It's not the same without you here. And, you know, yeah. And it's those pieces that those human pieces that do help tell a story that matter that I think of too, which then spurs more creative thoughts down the road. Sometimes I'll pick up on these themes. I'm like, all right. So I'm seeing a lot of people mentioning something specific. What can I do? How can I use that as a launching pad for the next spot, the next way to level up? Again, we are ultimately humans who stumble into data. And I think businesses would really thrive a lot more once they accept that.
Yeah. Treat people like people,
right.
Not like numbers. I've seen events do what you're describing, but at scale where they'll have like a postcard that they hand out and say, hey, write down something you want to tell your future self in about 6 months of two or three things that you want to be true that you've implemented by then. And we'll send this to you in 6 months. And I think this could be a really cool sponsored activity brought to you by Kraken, who we just mentioned, brought to you by the YMCA, brought to you by, and just a small little logo on there, but they're just sending it back to you saying, hey, we want you to see this transformation. That could be so profound. Don't respond to that because I want to save time for our big story here. So we could just talk the whole time about this kind of stuff. But yesterday we stumbled upon a story that was a response to our conversation about how do we improvise when things don't go the way that we expect. And you told me a story about Herbie Hancock and Miles Davis. I'd love you to tell me kind of your version of that story and we'll talk about it, how it relates to events.
Sure. So yeah, there's a well-known story that Herbie Hancock wrote about in his book. And he was young. He was new playing on any sort of touring schedule at all, but let alone with the Miles Davis, who he just adored, idolized, right? As most jazz musicians do. Mm-hmm. And so he gets this incredible opportunity and they're performing, I think this was in 1963. They're performing in Stuttgart, Germany. And they're going through, they're playing, they're performing great. All of a sudden he gets ready and he hits the wrong keys. He hit the wrong chord and he just freezes. He says it was like time stopped. He felt his heart drop to his feet and he froze, and he just instinctively turned back and looked at Miles Davis. And he said, Miles just kind of looked at him with his glasses down on his nose, looked over at him, made eye contact, looked back up, and started playing in a totally different key. So what happened is Miles Davis took the wrong chord that Herbie Hancock started playing, and Miles Davis turned it into this new sound, something brand new. So he was, obviously Miles Davis is the penultimate jazz musician, and to me at least. I know you're the jazz aficionado, so maybe that's up for debate. But he was able to take that discord and he turned it into a new harmony. And the minute that I heard this, I was out for a walk and I just grabbed my phone and I'm like writing notes to myself. And I'm like, this is incredible. What a powerful moment to be able to, number one, A, because we all screw up. We all make mistakes. It's just part of it. But B, to know that if you are a true expert, right? We've talked about like the whole 10,000 hours, right? You have to, I know it's a bit debated, but the general concept of putting in 10,000 hours of work into something is typically what some people believe makes you an expert. Expert. So if you are a true expert, to me, I believe that's your ability to be able to pick something up that somebody else dropped a ball, played the wrong chord, forgot to order some things, you know, sent the keynote to the wrong airport, whatever it might be, and you alchemize it, you change it. Mm-hmm. And to be able to pick that up and run with it, I think is very important, because harmony is not the absence of discord. I think harmony is being able to organize that discord and then to create it into something different. And I think the only way that was able to happen, number one, was Miles Davis was truly an expert, right? But number two, that then Herbie Hancock got out of his own way. He trusted his leader and he was able just to, you know what, this is our new path. This is our new true north and we're doing it. And he said afterwards, they were in the green room and he said, so, you know, as his hands are shaking and his knees are shaking and he's like, I'm so sorry. I can't believe that happened. And he said that Miles Davis just looked at him and said, bet you won't forget it. Right. He didn't chew him out. He didn't like say, oh, how could you have ever done this? Oh, you ruined it. No, he was a true leader. And he said, okay, things happen. Bet you won't forget it. And he didn't.
Yeah. It reminds me, I used to work for an oil and gas company and there were traders who would make have $1 million loss on a trade. Mm-hmm. And they would think, oh, I'm going to be fired. And the business leader would come in and say, well, I'll bet you'll never forget that lesson. Mm-hmm. Let's go make another trade. And, you know, obviously you have to have a high level of trust. Herbie Hancock was good enough to be in the band.
Yes.
He belonged in the band, but he was new. And just like, you know, when you first got out of college and got that first event job, mm-hmm. You didn't have the 10,000 hours. You didn't even have 10 hours.
No.
But you needed a leader who was like a Miles Davis, who would trust you to fail and then help you get back up and learn from it. And so there's so many lessons here. I think one is to leaders that we need to be around leaders who are going to give us that level of trust. If you're a leader who is constantly stepping in because you don't want anyone to make a mistake around you, then they're never going to grow and you're never going to grow. And that's part of it. Like you said, discord leads to harmony. Like in jazz, there are notes that sound wrong when it first comes in, but then you realize it's setting you up for the notes that sound right. And, you know, as a jazz musician, we say, if you play a note three times, it's not wrong anymore. So what you described of taking that moment of discord and turning it into something beautiful, And maybe if you're like unruffled, like it sounds like you are, the customer may not even know that wasn't what was planned in the first place. Exactly. So don't highlight it. That's you know, right. Kirby froze, yeah. But hopefully he didn't like stop and make a big scene about it because Miles just went with it. So that right. The audience probably had no idea.
Like,
you know, maybe it was supposed to be in G and Herbie started right. it in D. Maybe right. it was like, hey, this was always supposed to be in D. So
it's this new one. Yeah, you haven't heard this rendition of it. Right.
We always wanted to do it in this key because it sets up some new possibilities that
that's right.
We wanted to explore harmonically.
That's right. So. Not only that too, but also the other members of the band. It wasn't just Miles Davis and Herbie Hancock on stage, right? No. There were other members of the band up there who not only did they, you know, notice this, as of course they did, but they trusted that Miles Davis was leading them in the right direction. So they said, all right, well, now we're going this way. And I think that that is such a testament to the leadership also of Miles Davis, that the rest of his team, even when things went haywire, were like, well, this is just what we do now. And they all supported one another. I think that there are untold number of lessons to take from this. I think it is, it's so crucial to be able to purposefully, let us be clear, to purposefully create an environment where mistakes are acceptable, right? I'm not saying that you want to encourage, I don't know, maybe you do want to encourage. I would prefer not to encourage mistakes. I like when they happen sort of organically because then that there is a learning opportunity, right? But I also think it is, I think it's so crucial to also, to have that, to allow yourself to make mistakes, to allow your leader to see you make mistakes, and that for a leader to be purposeful in creating an environment where, okay, we just move on. And then later you might need to have a conversation. We're not all Miles Davis, right? We're not all, sometimes there will be cascading repercussions from maybe some sort of other mistake that might happen. But the takeaway I think is you do it, mistakes happen, you accept it. You alchemize it to make something new and different and potentially more beautiful. And then you move on. And he obviously, this is a story that he told in his book, which was published in the 90s. Mm. So decades later, it not only was something that he sat with and learned with, and I'm sure shaped him as he went on to lead his own bands, but it's something that as someone who is in no way, shape, form, or fashion a jazz musician, I can hear and think, wow, that's powerful.
Well, and I think in the world of events, there's a couple things you said I want to respond to, but in the world of events, we have to be like a jazz musician in the sense that there's improvisation that is always necessary. An event never goes the exact way that you planned it. Something is always going to throw you a loop, no matter how many redundancies for your plans you have. There are things beyond your control, and even things that you thought were going to work aren't going to work. And so you've got to pivot in those moments. And that's where having that improvisational nature of a jazz musician, the band was able to follow because they're used to it. Now, everyone in that band was good enough to say, okay, Miles just changed the key. And the bass player, for sure, I don't know who all was in that band, but for sure the bass player had to follow it. The drummer's going to play the song. He didn't need to know what key it was in, but he knew something was off. So he needed to make people feel comfortable. If there was a guitar or any other horns in the band, they all had to know and be able to follow. So you got to have the competence. But I think as event leaders, we need to have that permission and ability to respond in the moment and not just try to execute the plan that we decided 3 months ago.
Correct. You are absolutely right about that. That's where the magic happens.
Yeah. And then the other thing is, we talked way early in the conversation about the power of collaboration. Mm. And that's another thing that jazz is great for, is because one person cannot play alone. It's got to be the synergy of the 4, 5, 6 people, 3 people, whatever the combo is on the stage. They've got to be making music together. And that's why every time they come together, it's fresh, even though it might be the same song. It's also why you can interchange people, because if they know the song, they can come together. It will be the same song, but it's going to be a unique expression of it every time. And I think that's what can be powerful about an event, is you've got a unique group of people, your team, has a unique personality, the way that you show up at an event is going to be different from everybody in that room. If you've been given permission to be yourself, and to your earlier point, been given permission to fail. I think if we haven't been given, we don't want someone to fail, but we want people to try things that we know may not all work out the way that we thought. But if we have a reason why we did it and we can learn from it, then we should be, because otherwise we're not growing.
You're exactly right. And I also think you brought up a great point too, that even if you are not, you know, exhibiting at a show or a sponsor of an event, if you are the organizer of the event, if you are putting on the event, it's, of course, you want to have a repeatable playbook, right? So some general best practices, or, you know, we typically do a 3-day event here and, you know, with this, this, and this element that is always in it. But when you allow yourself also to say, okay, yes, we're going to keep that, but we're going to also add some things that are fresh. We're going to add some things that are new. That constant evolving of new ideas and allowing in something new, like you mentioned, with having somebody else come into the band, you know, who could pick it up and play it. As long as they know the basics of it, then they're good. They can add their own little dose of magic in there. And I think that that is crucial to events succeeding. You have to continue evolving. You have to stay curious. You have to continued at least trying new things, and because otherwise you're no different than any other event out there. They could stay home and save their money for that. But I think that was such a brilliant point you brought up.
Yeah, thank you. Well, dad joke forewarning. On that note, let's transition to our signature sign off. I can't promise to be a Miles Davis moment here, or even a Herbie Hancock, It's a Film Rashawn moment, but I would love you to give me three words that stand out in our conversation, and I'm going to play a response to it.
Okay. Let's see. Three words that stood out from our conversation. Alchemy. Evolution. Evolution.
Okay. And at least one emotional word, please.
Oh, okay. Capable. It makes me feel
confident,
unstoppable.
I like it. All right. And you used the word curiosity quite a few times. Mm. So I'm going to add that as a fourth word.
Please do. So. Yes.
All right. Here we go for Phil's interpretation of a Miles Davis moment with alchemy, evolution, resilience, and curiosity. Here we go. Bethany, it's been phenomenal to have you on the show. What a great conversation. I love having you as a new friend in the events world. Tell everybody how they can connect with you.
Yeah, definitely. So you can find me on LinkedIn, Bethany Gustafson. And yeah, that's probably the best way to track me down. I'm always on there and you'll see some of the stuff I'm working on, which is really great. But thanks so much for having me, Phil. I mean, this was such an exciting and fun opportunity. And I love being able to learn, you know, that curiosity like we've talked about. And this now is part of my story. So thanks for adding to my story.
I think that's one of the things about podcasts that's great, is we can even learn in the middle of the podcast. It's not just rehearsing something that we thought about before. We discovered some new things on this journey. So folks, stay curious, keep learning, create great stories through your events, and make a difference in the world one event at a time. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Event Innovator Show. Connect with Phil on philmachon.com and be sure to subscribe and never miss an episode.